Hi, I'm Josh, and I just want you to know that I caught Satan between the edges of my old folder from high school. I trapper keepered the devil.
Oh.
Yeah.
The devil can do a lot of things, but outsmart Velcro, he cannot.
Until the damn metal rings get all busted like they always did immediately.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're always kind of barracuda. They always do a thunk. And
like, oh, yeah, well. Surprisingly vicious for all the Lisa Frank art. You know, it's like a lot of poisonous animals in nature are bright too.
anyway. Lisa Frank aposematism, you heard it here first.
Anyway, this is Matt, obviously, and I was having trouble this holiday season preparing turkeys at work because we had a bunch of leftover spatchcock turkeys from the meat department that we've been serving these last couple days, and I was tried running them through the steamer because they were in bags. I put them in the oven and I was roasting, but they kind of came out wrong, and someone told me I have to separate them, and I was like, yeah, but they're really hard to do. And one of my coworkers reached into his pocket and pulled out this knife he got off of the Home Shopping Network years and years ago, and he said it's been the only one he ever uses, and I tried it myself and he was correct. It's a wonderful knife.
That is terrific. What is a cock flap turkey? What did you say?
Spatchcock.
What is that?
When you spatchcock a turkey, you cut out the backbone and you flatten it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you only have to cook it for like an hour and a half at a much higher temperature because the whole thing heats more evenly. So your turkey ends up being much more moist and cooks more quickly. And but you have to just prep it ahead of time that way, and then you just put it flat in like a tray and put it there.
I see, because I was like, I didn't know what the hell that was.
Yeah, spatchcock is also a good name for like a parakeet. I don't know.
Charlie will be our Paula Poundstone for today.
this is Charlie down. This is Charlie down in Austin. This is Charlie down in Austin. You know, I don't. Josh and I have had some experience with this. We have to do some traveling for work stuff or trade show things or different kinds of corporate-y waste of time and money, generally speaking. But you know you're really the fuck in for it when you've got somebody who's super chipper at like 7 o'clock in the morning, and then they just look at you and they just go, we're conferencing.
And we have brought you all here to watch a PowerPoint that we're calling Horror Show Hot Dog. So first, we have a short called Pickle or El Pepino. In this, we see a woman playing kind of nursemaid to a dude who she keeps calling Peckle. Not Pickle, but Peckle.
Yeah, that's a term of endearment, which I love. I wish I had called someone in my life Pickle.
I call Conlon that from time to time, but from because of Shaun of the Dead. Sometimes I call him Pickle, sometimes I call him Poodle, but it just kind of it moves around.
Love it. Love it. Keep doing that.
There's always Pickle Nose. Like Oliver Pickle Nose Knight.
I like that too.
Yeah.
Well done.
But this one is less cute because the guy eventually we find out was cheating on the girl, and so she's just pulling a misery on him.
She's revenge-inating.
Yeah, were you guys
a little bit, well.
Were you guys a little bit disappointed that there wasn't a pickle dick situation? Like, I thought that's where it was going.
Oh, yeah, that's legitimately pickling in a jar, yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was literally, I thought that's what we're going to get. And I was like, no, please just chop off limbs. Like, that's a bummer.
My brain did not leap to that conclusion, and I'm disappointed in my brain.
Yeah, right? I mean, come on, get with it.
Come on, Brian.
Because I just kept thinking, like, with the title of Pickle, and then once it starts to get, something's going on, but when she starts with the phone messages, I was like, I think I know where this is going. But then it was like, then the reveal is like, oh, she's cut off his leg, she's taken out his eyes. Like, nah, man, like, you know, get some brine, get some spices in there, get a little bit of garlic, and get a dick, like, get a jar. Like, it'll be fun. It's a real conversation starter.
It's the less sexy follow-up to Dick in a Box. It's yeah. The cock in a jar.
Dick in the brine, and there's probably some sea shanty about it, I'm sure, but
Dick goes into jar. Jar goes into brine. No, I can't quite Sharks finish the Jaws brine. Metaphor. Fuck.
I was just thinking of the joke about the guy who wanted to stick his dick in the pickle slicer.
What?
Oh, there's a guy who worked at a pickle factory, you see, and he when he came home one day, he said to his wife, I don't know why, but I had this overwhelming urge to stick my dick in the pickle slicer. And his wife's like, well, don't do that. And he's like, okay, I'll try.
It's a smart wife. A
couple days later, he's like, you know, honey, I just really want to stick my dick in the pickle slicer. She's like, I'm begging of you, please do not do that. It's like, okay.
Oh, wait, yeah.
But then 3 or 4 days later, he comes home and he's like, well, honey, I'm sorry. I know you said I shouldn't, but I couldn't stop myself. And today I stuck my dick in the pickle slicer. His wife's like, oh my God, what happened? Are you okay? And like, yeah, I'm okay, but I got fired and so did she.
Yeah.
Hey. I
took me a second to get there.
I'm the tail end of it. I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Like, I think I know where this is going.
I don't think this is entirely on the up and up.
Her name is Barbara, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, there's not much to it, but it's nicely put together, nicely acted.
Yeah,
I simple, appreciated the just the, you know, like empty eye CG was good. Like, yeah. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah, just the simple revenging told simply and just kind of like, yeah, all right. It was short enough that I think it worked for the premise. So I enjoyed it.
It was not a dill pickle. It was a sweet pickle.
Oh.
The one thing I would have liked, and I don't want to rewrite their short, and I'd give Maeve Ruffer for sure, would have been like when she said the thing about warning him countless times about the whole thing. I would have loved there have been a reveal that like she's actually got like a witch's curse kind of a thing. So if somebody is unfaithful to her, like this like thing triggers, and then it just becomes like it's a sort of like
like a post hypnotic suggestion type thing.
Yeah, like basically like I told you that like it's a thing, and it's sort of like I didn't tell you why, but I told you it was a thing. And then this is like this like cursed demon situation where sort of like now she has to dismember him. And it's sort of like, and maybe that would be a little bit too overt of like, you know, dudes, am I right? You know, like that kind of thing. But I just sort of like, I would have liked one more little thing beyond just sort of like, it's like bitches be crazy. But I mean, I'll say A for effort. I don't think it was like piggish or like mean towards women. I don't think that was their vibe at all. But, you know, just a little bit more lore would be perfectly fine because she's got the perfect accent.
Yes. Yeah,
for sure.
And pickle like that is my bread and butter. But
wow.
Yucky pickles. I'm a pickle connoisseur. I love pickles very much. Bread and butter pickles can fuck off.
I like them. They're tangy.
I know, but some people do. But many people do. But
it's sort of the platonic ideal of pickles. There's just sort of like, yes, that is a pickle when you picture one. I might like a more interesting pickle most of the time. But I can't, you know, you can't just dump on the you know, greatest of all time.
You can't always pick your pickle. It's true.
True. The it biggest the measure problem, by which other pickles are compared.
Mm-hmm. The biggest pickle problem really is that, like, you know, if you grew up, you know, we had like just kind of the normal in the aisle way at the grocery store pickles, the kind of, you know, nonsense ones. And then the first time you get like a real, like a nice one, and you're like, ah, well, shit. Like now I always have to spend more on pickles because,
yeah,
fuck.
And you'd be like, oh, this pickle I picked is more picante.
Ooh.
Then you'll become kind of a pickle prick. I'm just going to keep throwing it out there. Like, I understand. I go for quantity overall. All right. Let's talk about It's a Wonderful Knife, though. Es un cuchillo maravilloso.
But so the first thing we have to say about this above everything else is that this caught on the radar of the Fox News crowd.
It's a wonderful knife.
Yeah, that is just like it's leading to the degrading of societal values because my God, there's a movie called It's a Wonderful Knife. And I just kept thinking like it's like look up any body part. Like go to Google, look up a body part, and then like you're gonna get a lot of extremely gross things. And a lot of porn related things and whatever else. So like these guys made a cute little like enjoyable little horror movie. Like there's no degrading of society because there's no society to degrade. Oh, shut up. Like,
yeah. With an amazing moral message that lines up pretty nicely.
That was the thing. I was percolating about this for days after. I was like, man, they picked the harder road. And like,
they really did. Yeah.
They didn't fix everything. It's like, wow. It's like, all right, you pearl clutchers. Goodness gracious sakes. Anyway.
But yeah, so they're going to hate everything. I remember when the newer Jason Segel Muppet movie came out that it was on Fox News because the bad guy was an oil billionaire. They're like, here we go again, demonizing oil. Like, oh, gosh, you guys are upset a lot. Like a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like it's it must be really, really tough when it's sort of like when you're just you're so worried about the gays, you spend so much time thinking about gay sex all the time. Like it's it just must be just torture, really. Like it just like if it bothers you so much, but it's a primary foundation of your life. It's just sort of like, oh, that must give you a lot of heartburn.
I wonder what their genitals look like. I wonder what their genitals look like.
In my mouth.
Yeah. It's like, we have the internet for that. You can know.
Yes. Just look up a pickle.
God. And, stay tuned for more cogent and trenchant political commentary from me.
Indeed. Do we want to run down the gist of what happens?
Life. Yeah. Girl thwarts a slasher mid-rampage. And a year later, her life is kind of shitty. And so she wishes on the Aurora Borealis that she had never killed the slasher and saved everyone. And her wish came true. And so she ended up in like bad Back to the Future 2 country.
Yes.
And like, this is just an interesting thing to exist. Like, it has the same vibe as like Freaky and Happy Death Day, which makes sense because it's the guy who wrote Freaky.
Yeah,
but it's not Chris Landon directing, and I think that maybe comes out a little bit. But just taking, you know, It's a Wonderful Life and turning it upside down, inside out, starring Justin Long as one of the more committed performances I've seen this side of Zurg from Fifth Element.
Oh, God bless his heart. It was just like
so good.
The veneers and the little high-pitched voice.
And the lean-ins and the little, like, slight head tilts. And it was just like, kiss your face, Justin Long. Like, it's just, you understood the assignment and you just ran with it.
He says, like, one line when he shows up and you're like, just, you know, then the reverse camera angled and you're like, oh, it's Justin Long. But you can't really tell that he's gone completely bonkers from the first line. So then once you can see him and he talks, your brain just realizes how, like, the incongruity of the situation. You go, oh, my God, I love you so much right now. Like, I just knew that no matter what happened with the rest of the movie, I would just enjoy any time he was on screen. Fortunately, I liked the movie, but I certainly did enjoy any time he was on screen.
And we also get Jonathan Shake, the dude from That Thing You Do. Is in here. Yep. That's lovely. I didn't realize the heroine is
Bad
for Laura Lee from Yellow Jackets.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because apparently any of those girls are just unrecognizable if you see them not covered in filth.
Right? Yeah, like, true.
There was a picture of someone. I was like, that looks vaguely familiar. Oh, that's Misty. Like, Misty's an actual person.
Yeah.
She just looks like a normal human being, like way more than Christina Ricci does. But yeah.
Anyway. It's interesting how certain roles will make you forget that you're an adult and you realize actors are just acting and in makeup and that's not who they really are.
Well, and then also too, like, especially with Yellow Jackets, it's so specific and like, you know, just steeped in that, like, yeah, there's another one of the women that I saw in something else, and it's not too long, like very, very recently, and it was just like half the thing, my brain is just like grinding the gears trying to figure out, like, oh yeah, that's what's her nuts, and I was like, Jesus, and it was like how cool is that? And so it's like, it's one of those things where I think that's part of it, it's just because that show is so like very, very, very like. Very, very twice baked potato of just sort of like, at times very kind of scuzzy and kind of dire, you know, kind of Cormac McCarthy sort of territory where it's sort of like, oi. So yeah, it's so like, but yeah, no, and then the lovely and talented Catherine Isabel, which was great to see her pop up.
Yeah,
and Joel McHale too, which was just sort of like, that was kind of a trip.
Yeah, I always like it when he pops up and stuff. And I forget her name, but the gal that was so good, an influencer.
Yeah. Cassandra Now.
Just gets so few lines, but I was just like happy to see her working because like I hope she gets to do stuff because she was great. So
well, and also
it was
too,
a fun movie to just kind of like pick and choose, like, oh, what do I know them from?
Well, and having her in there too, like, and I want to say it in a very good, hopefully good way, but like the fact that they don't even, like, there's no acknowledgement or whatever else of her birthmark, it's like sort of like, it doesn't, she's just anti whatever the hell her name is, you know, like it doesn't, you know, it's much like that one kind of subpar slasher where like there's just like a Asian dude as part of their group of friends, and it's just It's like he's just Asian dude. Like it's not like there's like it's like talking about karate or being good at math or like all this other kind of horseshit that you'd pile onto a character. It's just kind of like no, he's just a dude. He's just like average. Yeah. He's like a bro. Like it's just
like it's whatever. Not important to the plot because it's rarely important to the plot if somebody's white and straight.
You know, yeah, exactly.
This perfectly said. That's but it's not important to the plot, and this one has a lovely like plenty of gayness to go around. I feel like
it's more gay than your average.
Makes the Yuletide gay is what I'm
but
saying.
But all like yeah, it fits that whole like sweet kind of love story, happiness, the real meaning of Christmas type vibe that the parody is sort of a touchstone for. You know, like
it's Charlie. Yeah, because Charlie, you are the resident expert on Hallmark movies, because I've seen a few, but I haven't seen nearly as many, you know, and I definitely enjoy a, you know, low stakes cuddle fest too, but did this feel like a Hallmark movie to you? Because it did to me.
You know, it did to, in terms of like the structure and like where we get from into the second act and the third act as far as like the conflict resolution, like 100%. Yeah, it definitely does have that feel of being like you're kind of dropped into the construct of a Hallmark movie. And yes, to your point, I have a guidebook upstairs that's the ultimate guide to Hallmark movies. It's on my shelf.
That's lovely.
I really enjoy them. Not a lot of them, like I fully admit that like the majority of them are just like not really good, but there are occasionally ones that are like pretty decent. Like there's one with Andy Garcia and Mary Louise Parker a few years ago. It was like called something like a Ferris wheel or something like that. And it's like, and it's a lot of, usually when you get the sad ones and somebody's dying of something, and that's what it was. But it was still a decent little deal. Like there's one with Danny Glover called A Christmas Train a few years ago that was quite good. And then the young lady who played the older daughter on the TV show version of Parenthood. She was in one that was set in London recently. And what I really like about the more recent ones is they keep sneaking these ones in there where they give like women agency. And it's like, it's, I love it. It makes a lot of fun. But and then there's been a few ones with like the a gay romantic kind of centered part of it. Or somebody who's like of a slightly different ethnic background. Like you're starting to see they're sneaking them in there, you know, it's like, it's kind of nice, but yeah, I mean, I would say from a structure standpoint, yeah, definitely. This definitely has that kind of feel of that kind of like that same kind of idyllic sort of little small town kind of deal. And
heightened, like,
yeah.
The acting is a little bit broader. The way that people behave is a little unhinged, but it is kind of like a movie set in a movie town, you know, not an actual town.
Yeah. It's got like a bit of like a Pleasantville reality to it.
Or almost like not quite Gremlins level of movie town, but along that spectrum somewhere.
Yeah. The snow at least looks real. What did you think of the slasher, which is just negative ghost man, because it's just an all white.
Right.
It made me think of like an evil flying nun. You know, like just negative man from Marvel.
Very, very feminine, you know. It's just like it becoming the angel on the top of the tree.
Yeah. Basically. There's just
the imagery.
Yeah, like it was so weird. They're like, ah, yes, our town is plagued with murders from the angel. And I think they do make that awesome move of saying, like, you know, whoever, no one survived it. And it's like, and yet everyone knows it exists. Like, I don't know how that works exactly. But
yeah, it's much like if you had like a river just outside of your town, and like in like late July and August, and like the river kind of gets higher, and it's like high water for a while, whatever else. Like, everybody's just aware of it. It's like in this small town, like, yeah, there's just like murdering kind of mask sort of thing, and it's just kind of a thing around here. Like, okay, cool.
Yeah, yeah,
once she goes through the looking glass, it is very heightened for sure.
Yeah, but it's fun. Like, it's not like, this isn't to say it's bad, it's just amusing and kind of in its own sort of way suits the slightly, I won't say like it's not campy, but it's just a little, it's got a bit of a wink and a nod here and there sometimes, I think, to what it's doing. But it works.
It's not so pleased with itself either that becomes too much, you know.
Yeah, not smug.
And they made a great decision in bringing this up with people when it's come up, you know, because the name is so catchy, but it's sort of like, is that they make a really, really good decision to, like, when she, you know, she realizes she's got to go, back and do the whole whatever and this whole thing. But the movie makes a decision, much like Spontaneous, where they're like, can't save everybody. And it's just sort of like, and I love that as a decision, because, like, the point of the story is not, well, we'll save everybody and that'll be great and everybody'll be a happy ending at the end. And it's like, but unfortunately, like, bad things happen and, like, you know, things you would love to avoid. And like, so I love in the construct of their story that they just sort of acknowledge that, like, it would be great to be able to, like, fix all these things, but you can fix some of them and you can kind of take stock of your life and take stock of where you want to go. And that's good. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not perfect. You've not fixed everything, but, like, there is some value to that. And it's like, so I don't know. There was something kind of like, I thought that was terrific, where they didn't monkey around with, like, oh, if we go back an extra this many days, or go back this thing and do this thing. And, you know, there wasn't any of that kind of stuff. It was just sort of like, there's some limitations here. And that's sort of like, and I really respected that.
And a lot of this has a similar vibe to Totally Killer. Although I think Totally Killer got a little more emotional resonance out of it.
Yeah.
But because this one is a little shallower, but it does have, I appreciated that it was just immediately, we know what happened and we know why it happened and we know what we're trying to do. So we're not going to fuck around expositioning all over you. Either you accept the Aurora Borealis pushed her into an alternate timeline or you don't.
Yeah, it's like, this is what it is.
Yeah. But I feel like it also took that approach to the characters and the world that they were in, because even before she goes through the looking glass, this is kind of a weird town. And just like the party that she's at with the girl who's there, even though everyone calls her weirdo and is horrible to her.
Yeah, I meant to bring that up too. Is that purely a movie thing? That, like, there's parties that are like, oh, like, everyone in high school knows the party's at X, and then just anyone shows up. Does that ever exist in real life? Because there's not a party where you could show up and be someone that no one wanted there that I've ever been to.
Do I strike you as someone who went to a lot of parties?
Well, I guess I thought maybe you'd be able to tell me, based on the number of parties you weren't invited to, how many you might have tried to show up to when we're allowed.
Right. We could compare stats. Oh yeah, opened my tits out, didn't I?
Well, I mean, we could compare stats and then find out which one of us was the slightly less losery. But, well, like, it just seems odd that would be the case. Like, hey, everybody, this Saturday, show up at Jeff's house. Mm-hmm. Even if Jeff hates you, he'll be like, whatever, we'll make fun of you as long as you stand. I probably knew people like that.
Yeah.
Well, there was a little bit of that. I mean, it was like, movies tend to have the thing of, like, it's either the plus 44 or, like, the can't hardly wait kind of, you know, this kind of, like, who is having these parties in their house thing. And there's, like, the movies seem to think of that. And then there's also the kind of, like, you know, clicky kind of things. But usually it seems like it's more like in public places, like, this is a cool people's place to hang out or whatever. Like, I almost said sock hop. this diner or this place or, you know, whatever. I mean, like, in Prescott, it was a lot of, like, was it the smoking section of Denny's? Mm-hmm. It was kind of a thing.
But also just, like, out in the woods.
Yeah, or just, yeah, well, I mean, they were surrounded by national forests everywhere. So it's just sort of like, there's plenty of, kind of drinking spots or party places or whatever the hell. But, yeah, I don't know. I think movies sort of have, this is, like, a highly magnified version of that. It seems like, to your point, Matt.
Yeah, it seems odd. Yeah.
I couldn't parse the meanness if they were in present day, which it seemed like they were. And I couldn't parse the nature of this town. Like, it's a small town. It seems to be at least somewhere where it's cold in the winter, but it's like a little place out of time, but not a small town where everyone is in despair and doing meth, which is what real small towns are like now.
Yeah.
So yeah. That's where I kept thinking, like, oh, this isn't the Hallmark movie Small Town, where everything is charming and we're getting back to, you know, the good old days and, you know, the childhood that we all remember and didn't have, kind of thing. Yeah, yeah. You know, the simpler time. So I can't tell if it is a little too shallow to hit or if it's just a really good parody. But I feel like if it was trying to make me feel for these people, it didn't do that. I was entertained for sure, but it didn't make me like care about the people.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's people making a movie that they care enough about it not to be kind of snide, but I also think that they're like they're not going into the Final Girls territory or like or Totally Killer.
Yeah,
where like you totally are kind killer of playing more of a heart.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not necessarily going into that. Or I mean even Happy Death Day, for Christ's sakes. I mean like there's a lot of good heart in Happy Death Day, for sure. So like and Spontaneous is another one that has that in there too. So like it kind of seems like I guess it's like which side of the road you're gonna make this particular movie to do. Like I think they do a good enough job of not getting too clever or cutesy, I think, to like get into where you're like, okay, get a little bit of eye roll, like, oh god. Like, you know, here we go with this kind of thing. Mainly because there's enough characters in here. Like, you know, the weirdo one, like, I really love how that character kind of grows over the course of the thing. And I love the auntie's sort of relationship, and like, I really kind of really dig that. And so it's like, that's what kind of makes when you go into Back to the Future 2 territory, it kind of makes it sort of there's a little bit of pain to it. She's like, ah, man, like we saw her in a much happier kind of realm, and like this sucks. Mm-hmm. We saw Dad in a much happier thing.
But then you also have the like what gets her to want to go to undo everything is Dad becomes kind of a jerk and Mom also is neglectful, and like they get
Mom has decided to deal with things by becoming a raging alcoholic that openly cheats.
Yeah.
Her husband in front of him and her kids, like just on the couch, and like the aunt's just like, yeah, we just have a glass of wine and kind of try to figure
out. But that's in Crapsack World though.
Oh, I thought that's what you were talking about. No, yeah, I mean that was amazing.
Yeah, before she travels to Crapsack World.
Yeah.
The year later that we get to.
Oh, gotcha.
Things are like already just improbably shitty. Like her parents give her brother a truck. Like the Mardi Gras truck for his birthday, and then forget hers.
And she gets like a workout gear or something.
Oh, yeah, they got her a tracksuit.
Which for led Christmas. To hilarity with the aunts just being like, you do not give a woman, like, what are you doing? And like, I honestly thought the same thing. It's like really cartoonish. Because it was, because it's like, okay, you have this like family, you have this crazy event. Cut to a year later, you have to have her be so despondent she wishes she doesn't exist. And it's like, I wonder what would make that happen if everything was kind of working out. And then it's just like, oh, it's just going to go batshit to like, we're not going to worry too hard about that. And I thought maybe the zaniness of that was to have us just kind of like, just don't worry about it. This is a necessary device to lead to
the, I guess I just wanted life it to moment. Be, yeah. Like I wanted it to be more sincere. About it.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Which it's still
because it definitely plays it more
hit as hard. Joking. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that is a very like Pretty in Pink or 16 Candles kind of thing. Have like the shitty parent, neglectful parents. So.
Yeah. That are just like oblivious to their insanity.
But still, like, there's a lot of good stuff in here. The kills are fun. The like, it is a slasher where they don't talk about the rules of the slasher a whole bunch, which is I'm always down for, right?
Yeah.
So it just to not to like damn it with faint praise, I just I wish that it had gone for the heart more, because that's what I'm into these days. but it was fun. You know, like in a year that Totally Killer didn't come out, I would say this was pretty dang good. And now it's like, yeah, that's okay. But I've seen how you can do this like a little better. So I don't know. Given the time, I guess I could just go ahead and say, actually, like this is a solid, give it 7.5 out of 10. I think it kind of breezes by.
I hate it when you say the exact same number I have written down, because then it seems like I'm just not putting any thought into it and just repeating you.
Which I really like that you emphasized that you had it written down.
Well, because I have the little Google Doc that I write all our ratings in, and yeah. I've started doing it where I write mine down ahead of time, because I always wonder like how much hearing other people's opinions will skew me during the course of our conversation. I do still like feel free to change it if I do based on our conversations, but yeah, sometimes I just go, ugh, now this sounds dumb, but yeah, 7.5 is kind of, that was right where I was going to go. I think, I had a really good time watching this, and I think that is kind of the most important factor in my rating. I also think that's probably their goal, was to make sure that this was like interesting and fun to watch, maybe more so than trying to like really be like reach out and touch your heart or be overly, you know, referential or whatever it might be towards the source material outside of kind of the parts that are. I think you could find stuff that is maybe a little more tightly knit together, but I don't want to say it's shallow, but for something that certainly doesn't ask a lot from you, like you can have a pretty good time with this. And that's just made for a fun experience. Like, you know, it's a good popcorn flick. And also odds are you could watch this with folks that aren't heavy into horror and they'll be able to handle it and have a good time. So yeah, just super fun, I thought. So yeah, 7.5, would recommend to people. This is good fun.
Well, I was going to say 7.5 too, but
not. God damn it. and he had an etched in his driveway. It's weird.
Did you finish each other's sandwiches? It's like, it is entertaining. It is a fun watch. You can definitely, this is one of those ones that like is not going to be super, super polished. Like, I mean, as much as I really like, there's ones that are, that got more theatrical, whatever, like a Ready or Not type of thing, or Happy Death Day, that definitely got like a lot of polish to them, a lot of bigger production for sure. This doesn't necessarily have those, that level of like, you know, production and polish, but that's okay. Like, I don't, you know, that's all right. That's perfectly fine. Like, you know, I mean, Anna the Apocalypse didn't either. And Anna the Apocalypse fucking rules. And so it's sort of like, sometimes you can just kind of get at the thing you're trying to get at, and like, and that's perfectly cool. And I kind of really appreciate that they weren't really trying to be like, they weren't trying to make the AV Club of like slasher send ups. Like, it wasn't, they weren't like too cool for everybody else. This wasn't like the kind of like, oh, you hadn't already heard of that? Meh. Kind of, that wasn't the tone, which I can appreciate. And then like, and when you go into Back to the Future 2 realm, you do kind of, definitely there's a feel for like, it's like, man, it's like, this is, and if you think about the Frank Capra original, you just kind of think about what the point of it is, like, however you come down on that, yeah, that movie, like, it's one of those things where you kind of just go like, it's like, yeah, there is kind of a decent lesson to be had there. It's kind of like a, I don't know, there's something sort of worthwhile there for sure. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think this did its job particularly well. It had a lot of people liked in it and was a fun, breezy kind of a deal. So, yeah, I was perfectly happy with it. It was just perfectly, perfectly fun. And also, fucking Justin Long.
That's so good.
Just like, it, because, I mean, like, you know, at a certain point in your life, whether it's working life or when you're growing up or whatever, everybody has known at least a couple people that are in that, like, they're just so saccharinely, like I'm trying to be so sincere kind of thing. And they're just like, and like,
it's called realtor syndrome. I'm trying to
There you go. I mean, it's like, yeah, it's exactly that. It's just like, God, it's just, yeah. So yeah, he just did. God bless him. God bless him and his ridiculous self. So yeah, I'll say 7.5 out of 10. 7.5 out of 10. Well, I had something I've read, but I lost it. So we'll just sort of say, like, just say like the Aurora Borealis. Like, it's like, it's like, I don't even know her or something like that.
At this latitude.
Also,
entirely in your kitchen.
So I don't forget to mention, you guys did see that I sent you that sketch from SNL with Adam Driver with the
the
biscuits on pasture. I was like, oh my god,
scooch on in here.
Yeah, I was like, oh my god, that's Midwestern Nights, the sketch. I was like, oh shit.
Should we talk real quick about I Trap the Devil?
Sure.
And then we'll break it up. All right, I Trap the Devil. Atrapo al Diablo.
Diablo.
That's what happened. I Trap the Devil is like a three-person indie horror flick that involves a dude who believes that he has trapped the devil in his basement. And when his brother and brother's wife come to visit unexpectedly, he has to maybe explain why there is a person locked in the basement, and maybe there will be a little bit of tension about what will happen to that person. I will say right off, like, I think this is a killer concept.
Same.
And I don't think it quite landed. And I wouldn't be mean to these folks, because this is definitely like a, it could almost be a Friends show. You know, like, it's very limited, like an enclosed space and a small cast. And you can do really cool shit with that. And I feel like they do a little bit, but not a lot. Like, it doesn't, it, this could be that Death and the Maiden just absolutely simmering this whole time between the guy behind the door who desperately wants out, the guy who's convinced that he can't let the person out, and the two people who are convinced they're the only ones who are thinking clearly, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like we don't really get that, and then we get a kind of a cop out of an ending.
The movie certainly takes its time kind of getting going. And I do think that I agree totally that conceptually I love this idea. And then kind of once it gets into it a little deeper, it does a good job for a little while of kind of like, okay, is dude crazy? Does he maybe have something? The responses from the devil or perhaps just person that he's got trapped, I think have a couple times that where whenever that thing's speaking, it is just lands like right in the middle, so it doesn't really push you either direction, although I do think they tip the hand a little too early with that. My big problem was maybe halfway through, or maybe it's the third act, I feel like when everything starts going to everybody having their different perceptions of what's happening versus what might actually be happening, like the biggest villain in this movie for me was the editing. Because I feel like watching the point where you have brother has like pulled the gun and, you know, is sitting at the table across from our couple, telling him no one can leave. And then you just have this like relatively long montage of people just kind of going about doing shit around the house, disconnected from each other. So you've got, you know, brother who's trapped the devil, either like sees at first he's like sitting down looking like real tense, like something's coming, he's got his gun, he's ready for it. And then you have him kind of drunkenly spinning around dancing in the living room. Then you have him passed out sleeping, and other, you know, our brother from the couple is up looking at all the stuff with yarn, matching it from one thing to another. And, you know, and it's just like, well, is he being vigilant about this thing? Is he drunk? If he is drunk and passed out, why aren't they taking the gun and leaving or letting the guy, like, what the fuck? Like, it didn't, it seemed like every time they sort of set up, okay, we're going to watch a montage of time passing, they kept showing things that didn't make sense in a chronological way, even if you're trying to speed it up with a montage, that I felt like I was completely lost as to what was and wasn't real. And then you get into, I think, legitimately being shown things that are or are not real. But I was so adrift from any real anchor at that point that those things didn't have the impact they probably wanted or maybe could have had. And then I also think when you add in, like, okay, everything is getting heightened, everybody's in the basement, there's maybe been violence, there's maybe not been certain violence. And then you just go, by the way, here's two cops. And like introducing characters in the third act is pretty hard to pull off in most cases.
It is most definitely the shit, we've written ourselves into a corner, so now we're just going to have some folks come in shooting, right?
Well, it seemed like they wanted to avoid ever having to answer the question.
But I feel like they tipped their hand really thoroughly by just having the dude behind the door say evil shit.
Yeah, and that's, I agree. But it's like, but if you're hoping to have a little bit of ambiguity, then you add this so that, you know, no one has to like truly like put their money on the line to see if they're correct or not. But then you still like, it does have an ending.
like they're so, deciding whether like, to open the door or not should have been.
That to me is where the, you have your tension.
The important thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It just seems strange. Where did you land on that, Charlie?
Yeah. I mean, it's a little tricky because it does. This is definitely one of those ones that, I mean, I know I say this from time to time, but I feel like this would play really, really well on stage. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because then, you know, the real, where this thing works extremely well, pardon me, when this thing works extremely well, it's when, not just because of things being uncomfortable, but like it works really, really well when there's a level of claustrophobia to it, where like, you know, like when fiance lady is in the basement and there's like the talking with the thing, and then there's, I guess she's like seeing stuff that may or may not be there, and like looking around and the lights changing and all that kind of jazz. Like I could really see how you could take part of a stage, illuminate it one way, and then drop those lights and then pick up another area. But then you're like, but your brain is like, but we know what's going on, like right down below, versus like in film editing where you're kind of like, it just changes the, I want to say the suspense meter, but like it sort of takes it off the burner, and then you kind of put something else on the burner, then you take that off the burner, put it back on the burner. And it's sort of like, and so just magically, it kind of just removes some of that tension and some of that unease, where I think if you were trapped in the same room with them and you there was no escape to escape to, then it would sustain its level of suspense and unease. Because like the one thing I kept thinking of was that they look like people. And then I was thinking of, I don't know if you guys have seen the one that's The Sound of My Voice. That one, I can't think of the lady, the lead in that one, but Britt Marling, that's what it is. Where it's like these guys they're like investigating this sort of cult thing. And then it's sort of like, well, there's a lady who's actually part of the cult, or what's going on there. Like, is it like a mind control thing or whatever? And it's like, and it's never just like overtly scary as much as it's like crazy uneasy. And like, you feel like there's nowhere you can go. And like, it's that level of tension I think that Josh is going for in this, but it's just kind of like it deflates its own balloon at times, where, you know, like ultimately when the scene, like when he's seeing the girl, you know, played by my, you know, pal in real life and would be girlfriend Jocelyn Donahue, it's like that should be wrapped with tension, but instead it's kind of like, but I want to know what AJ is doing, and I'm not 100% sure what fiance lady's doing. And so like that scene, which is supposed to be highly tense, just kind of feels like, okay, we got to get to the next thing because I want to get some more clarity about, you know, where we're at. And maybe it's because of the way that it's kind of black, you know, black set sort of like illuminated, and then it cuts back to like Realityville, and you're like, okay, we'll let the air out of the balloon. But there wasn't a lot of air in the balloon to begin with because you're too busy kind of caught up with what was happening two scenes prior with both Girl and with AJ. So it's kind of like, I just think like you take all this shit and you put it on a stage and the audience can't escape it, and you're physically in the same space. That tension, that kind of anxiety can like build, whereas like the film just kind of like the air just kind of drops and drops and drops and drops. And so like what you, to your old point about the thing in the third act where it's sort of like all of a sudden it's like, and the police, and it's sort of like, it's tricky, but it's kind of like at a certain point there has to be a way for it to stop, I guess. And I was thinking about that one last year. I don't know if it was Panic, if it was Chattanooga, or if it was what it was, where it's the one that's got Jeremy Garner in it, where it's like he's got like, it's kind of a ridiculous house, the leech, that one, where it's sort of like, this can only get to a certain level of outlandishness. And like at a certain point, one of these motherfuckers is gonna have to die, because I mean, Jesus Christ. And so like there's sort of a natural end to it. This there's an abruptness to this that kind of like it kind of robs it a little bit of, you know, why did you say, like, you know, deciding whether or not to open the door is kind of your natural you know, ending point, but it's sort of, you know, so it's like, but Matt kind of hit the nail up on the top. That's just super briefly. That was like, that's the main thing really, was that like, you know, from a concept standpoint, it's really cool because just like they look like people where you're like, is there something legitimately going on, or is this person like very, very gone and very dangerous? And it's sort of like, and then Take Shelter was another one that's that kind of vibe where that's Mike Nichols is comedy genius, not Mike Nichols, Jeff Nichols, the guy who did Midnight Special and Loving and such a brilliant director, is one. Take Shelter is that way where you're like, I spend 98% of the movie going like, it's all in his head, and then you're like, well, but maybe it's not.
Like, yeah, or even like 10 Cloverfield Lane, you know, did the world end, or is this guy just keeping people hostage?
Like, yeah, and it's like, and so, you know, in a way, like that this is kind of the realm where it's kind of be, like, but it's like that level of precision is hard.
And I think you can make a movie where it doesn't matter if it's the devil in the closet or not. That is still satisfying.
Well, I think you could have the tension in the basement, and then you can have your cops run in, but then the door needs to be open and everyone needs to be dead. And then we're all left wondering, did the devil get out and kill them, or did they kill each other? That's your way of not, you know, kind of having it both ways, is let us see the aftermath. But, you know, so we get a resolution on the characters, but not the question.
Yeah, you could have like everybody dead on the floor and the person in the closet still going, I heard noises. Is everyone okay? And like, you could end it that like that. That would be fascinating, you know?
Well, or you go the Dark Song route where you go like, and it's sort of like, okay, is it all just sort of a send up? Oh, wait, no, it's super not. Like, and then like, but that needs enough, but that requires about 10 to 12 minutes, not like, you know, like 20 seconds. Like it needs, you have to have more time for that to simmer itself out. And that's, yeah, again, I think that precision is just hard. I don't, and I'm not trying to like make excuses because I'm pals with them, but like, it's one of those things where I just like, you can see where the goals are, you know, and it's sort of, but ultimately like, I think there's kind of too many moving parts where ultimately like, I would have really liked, instead of like AJ in the first act where they first arrive at the home or whatever else, and he's like trying to take stock of the brother, and there's, you know, obviously some tensions and some hurt feelings and some people not being involved in each other's lives or whatever, and you're kind of recapping some of that to some degree, but like he is more standoffish than I think you would expect, and then brother who's in the house really is more initially is like, oh, you gotta go. And then he just sort of becomes like, well, since you're here. And it's kind of like, and that transition is weird. And so then once you get in the middle act where you're kind of laying all that groundwork, there's not enough, I don't want to say buy-in, but like there's not enough stake building to kind of build that tension to where once that air gets let out of the balloon at various points, it's not just sort of like just wanting to get to the next scene to get additional clarity and data. Versus like wanting to see where story goes, you know, like if that makes sense. So there's a difference between the two things.
You are right though that initial setup is super weird because he's like, I don't want you here. You should go.
He barely talks to him for a while,
and they go, well, we've decided to stay because it's so Christmas weird. And you need people with you. And he doesn't say, get the fuck out of my house.
Yeah, it's odd.
Or it is like any kind of resistance, really.
I don't know. There's like, a line too that goes nowhere, by the way, which, you know, like it is what it is. But it's, you know, the whole thing about like when AJ says something like, you know, I have as much right to be here as you do. And like, I feel like there's one more bit of dialogue that would have explained that they co-own the home.
Because we don't really know what happened to parents.
Exactly.
Yeah, I assumed it was like parents' house, you know, and they have died. And then brother has just kind of been living there by default because maybe he had been before they died. Mm-hmm. But the you know, the ownership might be not like just his because of however it was in a will or something like that. Like Mo's going through that process right now in her family. But like, it's, I think it needed a line or two to kind of because then, you know, because I couldn't help but feel like this is just really imposing, like to show up on someone's doorstep and be like, we get to be here because we feel like it, not because what you want us here. Like, that's a lot of a
for push. Your own good.
Yeah.
Well, and there's different ways. There's like the ways of doing those family and social uneasiness is there's different ways of doing that. Like the one at some point we got to do it because it has 17 of the most brilliant seconds in film history in terms of action. But this movie called Barbarian, that was a British one, came out a few years ago. And I think it was with a secret, I think it was a secret screening for one of the festivals we did or something. But I don't really 100% remember what it was. But suffice to say, it ramps up on the unease and tension or whatever. But it also, like, it also gives you reasons for people's behavior to be funky. Mm. And, like, which is good because then your brain can set that aside and then focus on other stuff. Much like The Invitation, where you're like, the first third of that movie, you're like, what the F? And then like the middle part, like, oh, okay, new life, religious, hippy dippy, some bullshit. Like, okay, that could totally explain this other part of it away. But they trick you in that movie because then you're like, oh, I'm focusing on this other thing. Like, oh, I should be focusing on the other thing. And you're like, which thing is actually important? Which thing's going on? Like, I don't know. Is it both? Is it neither? Shit. Like, maybe our guy just lost his crap and everybody else is being normal. Like, no, that can't be right. And like, they get you, they keep you guessing through a lot of that. Then you get to the third act and then they're just like, lay down. I'm going to fuck your head. And then you're like, wow. And like, but that's a cat and mouse game. It's not this kind of story. And it's like, so it's, I don't know. It's one of those things where, you know, you can kind of see it's like I said before, you can kind of see its goals, but it's just, it's the relationship between the first, middle and end are just, it's not as defined as would require to have that kind of like tension and unease, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
It requires a lot of, we require a lot of really sharp dialogue to do the like power dynamic between all four of our characters.
Yeah.
And the what happens when brother starts believing a little bit, and the more that wife is resistant, the more he starts to believe. And they play a little bit of that, but they don't quite, like, that takes a really steady hand, and this one just, it doesn't quite have it.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, ultimately this is, you know, it is a movie. It is a fine effort from some really good folks. I think it bit off more than it could chew a little bit. And like, I wasn't sorry that I watched it, but I just ended feeling like, oh, I wish that this had gone X, Y, and Z different ways. So, for me, it's like I'll say 5.5 out of 10.
Yeah, it sounds like we kind of all had similar problems with similar parts of this. I think once you get into the kind of montage-y, what's real, what isn't portion of the film, I feel like the assembly just doesn't work. And it just doesn't build the tension the way I think it's meant to. I think there's supposed to be like, oh, what's even real? Except that you have to kind of be very clear in those situations on what the possibilities are.
Yes.
And knowing, like, is it A or B or C or however many you want, but not knowing which ones are part of which means they all kind of seem like one thing. And I think that was maybe where I got lost and was sort of, and once you're lost in that and you don't know what the stakes are anymore, you kind of, you can't really care about any of these people. I think we tossed around some ideas on how it could have been more effective for us at least. So yeah, don't hate it, but it wasn't what I was looking for. I'm going to go even a little lower. I think I'm going to say like a 4 out of 10. I love the idea of a voice in a cabinet. That's it. It's a great premise for a movie. I've seen it a couple times.
There's an Indian in that cupboard.
Yeah. A what, sir?
Chinaman.
Oh God!
There's a Chinaman in the hutch, and there's a wetback in the foyer. Like, okay, no. All right, sir. I think you've had too many opportunities. I think it's time to head home now.
We're all canceled.
Yes. So, like, yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, like I said, I can see and respect and really admire the goals that they were laying out with this. I really, really think that some of the middle area, if some of the middle area could have been anchored on the front and back end of the kind of surrealist sort of like, is it a dream? Is it real things with a reminder that like, it is real. Like where you just early, you know, it's like, oh, here's reality. Then somebody goes blinky blinky, and then that's like such a goofy blinky blinky, and then back to normal. Then you start to get to where like, okay, is it all in their head or not? And that allows you to then compartmentalize that and kind of stick in with where the story's going. And there's just not enough of that ability to kind of hold a breath for a long period of time. But yeah, I mean, it's like I really do admire anybody who's going to try to do the like. You know, do the kind of, suicidal tendencies, like, I'm not crazy, you're the one that's crazy kind of story, because I don't think that that's easy. And it's like, right. And there's a lot of pitfalls there. And there's moments of this that really are definitely there's a lot of unease to a lot of it. So, yeah, I mean, I can probably high man on the totem pole and admit just a little bit of, a little bit of bias in that regard, to some, as far as that's concerned. So, but, I'm all human. So I'll say six, I'll say 6 out of 10, 6 out of 10. I kind of feel like at the craft stores, they should have a thing like they do with spray paint, with like red yarn or like red string. They're like, yeah. If you just are buying red string and like, oh, and like 5 boxes of push pins, they're like,
and you got like a Kinko's box under your shoulder.
Yeah, it's just sort of like, it's like, hey buddy, you working on a project? Like what you working on there? Like, oh, I'm knitting a scarf. Like, oh, good.
That's another way I knew I wasn't invested, is because I was looking at this incredibly intricate amount of stuff and going, how come you never see where the end of the yarn is?
Mm-hmm.
There should be points where there's just like a little tag of yarn next to the pin, because it's like where it starts. And I started looking for that while he was talking, and I'm like, this isn't working.
Nowadays, you would just do something online where you could have an infinite amount of zoomable space that you could share.
Matt, I think it was, I can't remember, I think it was you, and if I'm taking the credit away from Josh, I'm sorry, but that we were talking about Wolf Creek or whatever else, and I'm talking about like the wall of evidence, and like how eventually with all these smartphones related things, like news stories, and I sort of like, it's like, sir, I'll have you know I have a bin of iPhone 3s.
Yeah. <Good Lord. laughs> Oh, all right, we'll take a quick break and we'll be back with conference.
Yes, sir.
And finally, we have Conference, or La Conferencia, which is available on the Netflix. Is a Swedish kind of joint where all of the words are almost like English words, but not quite, in amusing ways. Involves a group of civil servants who have just finished brokering a deal for a giant shopping mall and are going to have a like retreat to celebrate, and they're going to come unraveled, and then they're going to get slashed. And this is a refreshing like slasher where there are no teenagers and there are no slasher rules.
Yeah.
Again, yeah. I say like, it's so rare when you get one where the people don't go, oh, well, you're going to make it because you're the final girl. Mm-hmm. It's like, stop it. Yeah, so this doesn't do any of that. It's just interested in some creatively gory kills and some truly reprehensible humans for parts of it. So yeah, I had fun with this. I thought it was kind of kicky.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this a lot. I thought it was well made and just vicious in the right kind of ways. And also, I don't know if you'll picked up on this or if I was reading more into it or whatever, but one of the things I really dug with this was that like our like alpha bro and his like little lackey sort of guy and their kind of shady underhanded kind of deal or whatever, like it, when alpha dude is like trying to dress down the lady who'd been gone for like kind of like what seemed to be like mental health reasons and stuff like that, he starts to try to play the gaslighty card, and she's just like, nope. Mm-hmm. It's like, and not only just like that, like, you know, showing them up or being all whatever, but it's more just sort of like, but I mean, black and white is black and white and gravity is gravity. So if we've got proof, then you can say whatever the fuck you want. And I think I'd love that. That was so cool.
Yeah, the
thank you movie. Thank you.
Yeah, God, that guy, they do a good job making that guy infuriating. Mm-hmm. Like, ugh. This, I just have to point it out because it was stuck in my head the whole time I watched it, and I've been thinking about it off and on since I watched it. This is another movie that falls into the category of films in another language that will say random sentences in English.
Yeah,
and it drives me bonkers every time because I'm like, why? Why do they do this? Like, I don't understand. And this is, again, coming from a guy who is on a podcast where we say the title of the movie in Spanish for no reason. it makes sense that we pick specifically to say the title in Spanish. But there, it's not even like, there's a couple times where you're like, oh, that's like a phrase. Like he's saying like a meme.
Yeah, here's the big if you get no pain, no gain.
Yeah. And like that, I kind of get, because like we say like menage a trois or whatever. Mm-hmm. But like, then there's like, well, I do. But then there's also like moments where it's something just completely banal where it's just like, and we'll meet at 8 o'clock. And you're like, what the fuck? What is that about? And I need to figure out who to write a letter to be like, okay, you know the writing of this film. What was that choice? Is that like, why?
Does everyone talk in like Swenglish in Sweden? Because I know we know everyone is taught English
in Sweden.
In school. Yeah.
Yeah. It baffles me. And it's like, I have no like real opinion on it as far as the quality of the movie in any direction. I just purely in real life, that confuses me greatly. And I cannot let it go because every time I see it, it just spins me up again. So I don't know, maybe by next episode, I'll have done the proper research and I'll be able to come back with an answer to that.
See, the one thing I loved about that part of it, that kind of as a runner, was that like, you know, lackey guy, it was like it was be cool to say like cool guy, kind of Bradley Cooper, Ryan Reynolds-y sort of phrases in English. And I like, and that makes me like a cool guy. And like half the time you can't get the wording right. And it's just sort of like, and they all just kind of go, ugh.
Parts of it seemed like that, right? Like you're doing like almost a Schwarzenegger line from like an 80s movie where he's and it's like, that makes sense. Like that would work. But sometimes it just didn't seem like that could have been a meme. Like, anyway. But yeah, I enjoyed this. One of the first things that made me really happy was like, oh, cool. It's not one of the group.
Yeah.
Is killing them. That was, for whatever reason, like once I realized that was the case, for some reason that instantly made me like the movie just a little more. Hmm. It's like, oh no, you just like, there's just, maybe because sometimes it's nice to see something that is just sort of straightforward, which will lead into one of my complaints about the movie.
And it isn't, yeah, like it isn't the girl who had the mental health breakdown.
Yeah.
It isn't the guy who came into the office with a complaint.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, these are shitty people and someone has taken, like, they've pushed, I can't stands no more, and he's going to go take him out. Like, oh, cool. And then
the killer is somebody that you've pissed off, and they're like, do you realize how little that narrows it down?
Yeah.
Right. Well, that was one of my takeaways was that, like, it was, I kept thinking, like, they keep talking about this, you know, there's this big mall deal, and they've got everything all kind of brokered in, and they've got this thing, that thing, whatever else. And then you go, and it's like what the location is, and this and that, whatever else. And you're like, that's not even close to logical. Like, why on earth would you, get all these things out of here so you can develop this land for a thing that, like, guaranteed is not going to work? And it's sort of like, and I'm the viewer watching that, and then just going like, why are they not understanding that? And it's sort of like, but there was somebody that was seeing the forest for the trees, but like she was kind of like out of the equation for a little bit of time. And it's like, I thought that was very clever. Mm-hmm. I really liked that. They're kind of like, hey, dummies, like, have you thought about looking at this for just 2 seconds and realizing that, like, this doesn't make any logical sense? Like, oh, wait, yeah, it's, I guess it doesn't. Like, shoot.
Like, why do you think that you would build a building that an IKEA would move into instead of IKEA just building their own building like they do everywhere else?
Yeah, it's like...
Well, it's fully, like, still believable, though, in the sense that that would satisfy the shareholders for that quarter. And that's how this has worked now. It doesn't matter that it will completely fail in a year. They'll be on to the next thing. you know, like it's simply, what did you show X percent of growth? Did you do this many projects? Did you sign this many documents or whatever? And like, look at what we're doing. Aren't we great? And like that one dude, I think, has the stuff that he's planning to just use this big success of getting this thing made to jump ship to a different company.
To the company that he brokered the money from the municipality going to this private firm.
By the time this whole thing is, you know, crashes and burns and puts the other company out of business, he'll be working somewhere else, you know?
Yep.
Yeah.
So it's like, it all lined up nicely. And the part that is like the sad part is like, you have the other mid-level people at the conference that are just going along with it, 'cause that's just what their job, you know? And it's just like, oh, you're so bought in and not realizing that you will in no way benefit from any of this. You know, it's that whole, like, why are you working so hard? They're not going to give you two paychecks. Like, just idiots.
Well, that was
go ahead.
I did right in here for just a second.
Yeah, anytime.
Oh, no. I said beep beep.
I'm in a tiny car.
I bought it off of Stuart Little.
Of course, it is illegal now because it's ridiculously wasteful. Because of its enormous size. I also thought it was smart to have the hotel staff there. And sometimes in a slasher, you get overpopulated. And this has plenty of people, but because we have the hotel people, we get like 3 kills before anybody really knows what's going on, because all of them could plausibly have been somewhere else.
Yeah.
And so they get to chew through a couple of more cast members and show us how serious this killer is before. And we get a little more time for our group to interact so we can know exactly who we love and hate among them. So I think that was a really sharp thing to do. And it could have slowed the movie down, but didn't.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they're not, and you also get the feeling, maybe if you've seen enough slasher movies, you kind of get this feeling, but yeah, as the staff members are kind of getting picked off at the early part of it. Yeah, at least I got the feeling very quickly that it was sort of like they're not actually being targeted in some specific way, or like we didn't get enough of a lead in with them beforehand to where, like, okay, now we know that this is the person that like left the prescription medication in the wrong room, or this person did this thing or whatever. Like, it wasn't, it was just more just sort of like this guy is just sort of like, you know, it's just kind of it's like, I will revenge on all the people. And it's just sort of like, you just happen to be there. And it's sort of like, and so I like the early on, that seemed like they kind of tipped their hat a little bit to that thing. Like, there's a little bit of a,
at least think anybody who is aligned with the development going forward is going to be a victim.
Yeah. And it's like, exactly. Where it's sort of like, but it's not like some big exact plan, and it's sort of like, okay, cool.
None of them are related to Sydney Prescott or her mom.
Yeah, I think if they'd all just gone home for the weekend, they would have been fine. I think it might have more to do with, if they're there, that's still one more person that could call for help or something, right? So let's just, you got to eliminate everybody from
this. But then they were also on the cover of that magazine.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Or whatever.
True.
As being like, we want this to happen and we don't care how many farmers have to die.
Yeah,
that wasn't really what they said, but you know,
that's how they were thinking it.
I did also really appreciate that the you know, movies have budgets and they have, you know, limitations or whatever else. I really liked that they kind of worked in the environment in which they shot the thing as being like, they kind of address that, like, it's like not super fancy or like not super nice or whatever. And they kind of worked that through a little bit into this idea of like, oh, well, you know, the older guy, like, oh, back in my day, we used to do this thing, that thing. We used to do blah, 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 blah. And it was like this kind of dump and whatever else.
And just hookers and blow. And
yeah. And it's like, and so they kind of worked that into they actually kind of worked that in a little bit.
Yeah, and even like the dodgy Wi-Fi and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, I thought that was cool. 'Cause it's like, you know, sometimes you can kind of be like ashamed of your kind of budget of that respect, or you can kind of just like kind of lean into what the deal is. Kind of like, I mean, I know we were different on Severance, but like, you know, I love Severance, but like, what I loved about that one is this idea, like, oh, we're gonna do this big team building thing and blah 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 blah. And it's like, but we're super going to cut corners cost wise. It's like, we're not going to tell them we're going to do that. We're just going to make them think that it's like a fancy thing. And it's sort of like, and then, but there's like a mistake and then there's two things booked and all, you know, all the things that go into getting them into this more remote area or whatever. And this is like, so I don't know, there's just part of me that just always really appreciates that. It's like, I don't know, like, just at least acknowledging a little bit of things, because sometimes you get the other side of that, which this is going to be a shitty thing to say, but like sometimes you get the thing where the movie just sort of goes like, I will not acknowledge at all that there's, that this wouldn't look this way or this wouldn't be this fancy or this would be more fancy or less fancy. Like the movie just goes like, no, please ignore that. You don't need to be looking at that. That's not a thing that matters. And it's like, yeah, but I mean,
This is a high rolling casino where rich people bet on who's going to die first in a, like a hostile kind of situation.
Well, like, and they do that in my beloved Hallmark movies where you're like, oh, the big, there's going to be a big town performance, whatever else. And like, everybody's going to be there. And then there's like 22 extras.
I mean, that's probably about how many people would show up to some kind of holiday performance in most towns.
Oh, I don't know about that, but I mean, it's like, but I think it always is so adorable because you're like, it's like, ah, yep, this is our limit for people wrangling. Like, okay, well, that's fine. So, you know, it's, I love that they kind of leaned in to that on this one, but I also appreciated too that the staff, there wasn't anybody, there wasn't some big characters, like the maintenance do all guy, like wasn't. Like secretly like a drug dealer guy or like our main leader lady was like also like super bitchy or whatever. Or like they didn't like jam in extra character stuff that wasn't really like necessary, you know? And so they, you know, you didn't get into that kind of stuff. I did kind of wonder early on, I was like, are they going to make a lot of these characters very much like from like The Office? Mm-hmm. And it's like, but they give them enough, you know, the they do the shorter haircut and the glasses, smoking all the time. Initially, I was like, gosh, she feels like an office character. But then she kind of moved outward a little bit. The older fellow, same kind of thing. So they kind of went away from that kind of archetype thing, which I thought was good.
Yeah, I thought they had a pretty good mix of people at a job like that with the different justifications you would have for being there. Like from, I have been here for so long, I can't imagine life outside of it, to like, I came in here with a passion for local government and just, and everywhere between, you know, the guy who wants just to have a stepping stone to the next thing before he runs for president or whatever. That, it was interesting having the slasher be dispatched, but then the like true denouement of the story is taking out the tech bro guy.
Yeah, that was going to be the part I then complained about for being the opposite of my initial thing that I loved about it being a like great straightforward setup. Mm-hmm. Is I've gotten really weary as of late with like secret second ending to things, and it's like, oh man, isn't it cool when a story's over and it can just be over? And it might be because I've been playing a lot more video games than I have for a while. And it's so often that you fight your way through, you know, 89% of a game and you finished all the stuff, and then the people that you've been working with the whole time go, secretly we're the bad guys, and then you have to do like another 3 hours of fighting all the people you used to be friends with, and it's like, god damn it, it would have been fine if I had simply saved the world. Like, we could have stopped there. The you didn't need to like double save the world. And it's like, I was pretty cool with like our like, ah yes, everyone, you know, is mostly dead, but like the thing is resolved and cool, and it's like this guy that we've forgotten about, blah, and it's like, I don't know, I didn't need it. I was just sort of, I rolled my eyes and was like, god damn it, I don't need that button.
I was not sorry to see him get scalped.
No, the scalping's cool and all. I would have been fine with that happening earlier or something. I didn't need the, oh, one more Boogan like type thing. That just, I don't know, that drove me a little nuts, but it's a minor complaint overall in the scheme of things.
I did really enjoy the one of the cop guys that quite literally says, I said, what the hell happened here?
That's pretty good. Yeah.
Like, I really appreciated that, because it's like, because at a certain point you do kind of get that thing of just being like, well, there's a mess around here. Like, Jesus Christ.
Where to start?
Yeah, y'all had a day, didn't you?
That's pretty fucked.
Like, yep, four corpses, everything's fine.
It's like, oh, the other thing that I want to give these guys a great deal of credit, because a lot of slasher movies, you get the same thing where it's, you know, the guy's got the big plan and he's got the big revenge thing, or it's like, you know, like the late 90s, early 2000s kind of, a lot of them, which are a lot of fun, where you get, you know, Urban Legend or Valentine or any of those ones, you know, like, and there's like the big mask and the big present and the big reveal and whatever. Mm-hmm. In this case, dude just like shows up and then he's like, oh, look, a mascot head, like, dope.
Yeah, like he had apparently just not planned on hiding his identity at all, which was fine because they wouldn't know who the fuck he was. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, it's good.
And I dug that. I thought that tickled me to no end. I thought that was so funny. I was like, oh, what a great decision. Like, just like, that was great. It just made me laugh. It was just that tickled me. I thought that was really funny.
And oh, justice for poor hippie lady. Yeah. So the lady who ends up with the machete or the sickle to the dome.
Yeah, it's pretty hardcore.
And just ends up wandering off into the lake and tripping over a body. Like, some of these things are almost funny.
Well, that was one of those little bits that you don't see. I sort of figured that you would see it more actually, but you know, where, you know, she does the whole thing of like, she just, we assume that it's the guy that had the grievance, mm-hmm. or that they assume that it's the guy who had the grievance or whatever else. And she's just trying to talk to him like, yeah, you don't want, this is bad. And this is, you know, this stuff to happen. This is like, just really like, this is such a, like, you know, there's better ways to do these things and this, that, whatever. And you know, yada, yada, yada. And then she just goes and like, you know, oh, this head thing must be really hot. And she takes it off of him. And usually leading up to that point, you always have that, like, oh, quick goof around, like in the slasher movie. And mm-hmm. then it's like, then whatever else, the person was like, kind of has that look of surprise. In this case, she takes off the head and she's like, wait, you're not that dude. Who the fuck are you? Kind of thing. And it's like, oh, this never happens.
They just instantly thunk.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
I was like, yeah, it's well done movie, because like, we really wish you'd see that more often. this is another little choice in this that really tickled me.
And I guess like the only criticism I had was it took a while to kick into gear for me because they were all sniping at each other. But as soon as we started getting like a couple of kills and the tension between everyone keeps rising, then it sucked me in. And by the time we get to like the hot tub outboard motor incident, then I was completely okay with whatever this thing wanted to throw at me.
That was so yucky.
Oh, that would take forever. Oh, sucks to be that guy.
Yes, like, well, and also too, because like they see him wearing the mascot head, and he's like, oh, quit goofing around, River. He's coming closer with the motor, and you're like, I don't know, if it was me, it would just be like, it's like, okay, I'm gonna look like the stick in the mud, but I'm gonna need you to stop doing that right now, or I'm gonna kind of back away. Like, yeah. it was the damnedest thing. It's just like, I don't know, maybe I've been on enough outboard motors in my life to know those things are dangerous. Like, those are just scary.
I mean, it is just a spinning propeller and like coming right at your sensitive meat parts. That's not going to win you any friends.
That's most of my parts.
They're made of meat. They're made of meat.
Made of meat.
Yeah. So like, I thought this was really fun. It is a pretty straightforward slasher movie in a way that I appreciate. You know, it was just kind of doing its thing front to back, really. Like, it's, you've been saying, refreshing. It's not out to scare anybody, really, but it is out to just have a bloody good time with the, you know, all kinds of weird and creative kills and a couple that are just like, I'm just going to hit you with a thing. It's going to be fine. So I would say, this is kind of, it's like a 8 out of 10 golden shovels.
I like this well enough as well. I do think it's kind of fun to see a movie that is in a lot of ways much more of a traditional 80s slasher, because like we've been talking about a lot this episode, there are no like slasher rules. There's no meta textual anything, you know, like having just watched The Burning recently at Dismember the Alamo, like it's just, you know, people just start getting killed. And that's just the whole story. There's not like an idea of like, oh, this will turn into a franchise and this will talk about all the slashers that came before it. It's like, oh, this feels just like that. It's just, this is what's happening right now to these people. And that's all you need to know. And that's fun. So yeah, it's, surprisingly cool for all that. Not my favorite of the week. I think It's a Wonderful Knife is still that. But it's solid. I'll give it like a 6.5 out of 10. God, to me, the greatest nightmare of this whole movie is having to go on some kind of weekend retreat with coworkers. That's still just, ugh. That's the real horror.
Yeah, just, you know, I've seen enough of these now where you're sort of like, oh, we're going on a team building kind of like trip. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm going to have food poisoning that weekend. Yeah, no, that does a lot of stuff right. But yeah, I mean, I think above everything else, like it is just your kind of straight ahead kind of slasher thing. Like there's no larger point. And even though, like, you could say, okay, well, the political components of, like, you know, over development or like driving people out of their land or whatever else, so it's like, I mean, it's just kind of part of story. It's not like there's nothing, there's no grand, doesn't have any grand illusions about
like, this is not like People Under the Stairs or Get Out or something.
Yeah. I know 100%. And it's like, but yeah, well constructed, well put together, you know, enjoyable kind of thing. And another thing that I would be remiss if I wouldn't mention, but what I really enjoy is that the only inkling of any kind of romantic-y relationships, like our main girl and then Glasses guy are like obviously close, but they never really like talk a lot about like what their actual relationship is. And like the two older people in the office are like obviously close, and there's a comfort level there, but there's no shoehorned in harassy guy or couple or people that have been hooking up or married couple or estranged married couple or guy who wants to get with this other girl or a girl or really whatever. Like, it's just not part of the story. And it's like, I'm really kind of starting to appreciate that and stuff where like, it's just like, you know, I don't know what it is, but I just like, if it's part of the story, great. If it's part of the plot, great. But like beyond that, I just don't need that to be a beat, because there's so many of the 80s slasher movies that have that kind of component to it, which when it's all said and done, it doesn't mean anything. It's just it's kind of meaningless. And so it's just kind of like, sometimes you can have a story without that in it. Like, oh, what a clever idea that is. So like, yeah, well done, Sweden.
Well done, Sweden. Well done indeed. So what did you put your rating,
Jenna? So I'm going to go the same as you, Josh. I'm going to say 7.5 out of 10. I will also mention, too, that it was very amusing because Kristen was laying on the couch working on stuff, so she wasn't looking at the screen. And so, you know, predominantly the dialogue is in Swedish, but you know, a few of those American English lines or a couple of other things that are in there, whatever else. And at a certain point, Christian just sort of goes like I'm having a great time, like kind of trying to figure out what this movie's about. It's because like every once in a while, it's like to work hard, to play hard. So it's like, what? just sort of being very like, yeah, if you're just sort of removed from it, or else like getting bits and pieces of English, like, huh?
Teamwork makes the dream work.
Oh God, that was that. There's of all the corporate-y brainless speak, like that's the one that like puts my teeth on edge. Like I hate that one so hard.
There is no I in teamwork makes the dream work.
Yeah, the one a local business in Shakopee the boss used there was detail brings retail, when people would be cleaning out the rental vans. Ugh, got time to lean, you got time to clean.
Oh yes, that one.
Get my foot up your ass sideways.
Let's take one more break and then we will be back with things that we're going to watch for next time. So I should let you know that this is the last recording we're going to make this year. We, many of us have many people to entertain over the holiday break. So going to take a little time off, but we will be all the funnier in 2024, I feel like, for that. So obviously, since we're not going to record again before Christmas, the move is to watch only Christmas-themed movies.
Yeah! So
we're going to watch There's Something in the Barn, that's on Video On Demand and is apparently delightful. We're going to watch Dead End, which I think you can find on various ad-supported streaming platforms.
2003?
And, yeah, Dead End 2003 with Ray Wise and Lynn Shea. And then also we're going to watch Sacrifice Games, and that is on Shudder. So There's Something in the Barn, Dead End, and Sacrifice Games are the films to watch. I have been Josh this entire time, and I say good night.
Yeah, we will also have a short. I did not find something holiday-themed because I forgot to think of that till now as a possibility. So instead, you're going to get something that's this, I might be stretching it a little with this one, but it's weird in a very particular way that I enjoyed. And I think you'll like it. So it's a little short film I found called Write a Song About Heartache. And as far as y'all know, I've been Matt this entire time, and I'm sorry.
Write that down. All right.
It'll be in the show notes.
Well, yes, but we all have our processes, Matthew.
Goodness me. That's why I'm singing a bucket of ice right now.
God. This is Charlie down in Austin. Take care of yourselves, take care of each other. You'll be looking forward to recording again somehow in the new MFing year. And then if you get opportunities to seek out other kinds of stuff, there's plenty of cool holiday themed things that have come out in the last little bit of time, where sometimes it's just tangential to the plot, sometimes it's primary to the plot. You know, there's, you know, of course, Krampus is always, you know, the Brad Doherty one, like that one just rules. The Apocalypse rules. Like there's a lot of really cool stuff around that you can kind of find that's really fun.
Yeah, don't forget to watch Gremlins and Hawkeye.
Yeah, oh, the Hawkeye, God, it's so lovely and great and just so terrific. And yeah, so there's just a lot of cool things out there, a little bit more off the beaten path. But I would say above all those things, if you go on YouTube, you can search the Muppet Christmas Special, which was, I think, from 1987. And there's no, like, you can't find it anywhere, but you can find the full one on YouTube, and it's really terrific. And you get all the Muppets along with all the Sesame Street characters, and you get everybody and their mother, and it's really just wonderful and just a joyful kind of a thing. So there's that. So take care of yourselves and drink water, get some extra rest, and we'll see you in the new year. All right, see you later. Bye-bye.
Sweet.
Oh man, quick joke for you. Yeah. What did the pirate say at his 80th birthday? I'm matey.
Hey Kristen. What did the pirate say at his 80th birthday? I'm matey. Yeah, I got a sort of tired and exasperated.
Yes, chuckle. That's what you need.